Lightning Dogs, the official podcast presented by the Nerdist Show Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdist Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination. And with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdistshow.com. Lightning Dogs is conceived as an all-ages property, but these behind-the-scenes conversations are not all-ages. So listen at your own discretion, baby. Woo!
Sometimes a great idea is truly like a bolt of lightning. And sometimes, if you're lucky enough, you can capture the exact moment that it strikes. That's what happened for us one fateful night while recording an episode of Nerdy Show. We accidentally launched a concept that derailed the entire show and, in no time, our lives. We couldn't stop talking about our favorite action figures and B-movies while twisting them into strange creatures, weird adventures, and dog puns. Lots of dog puns. This is the story of Lightning Dogs, a journey steeped in the glory of 80s and 90s animation and sci-fi, where anthropomorphic dogs tear through the wasteland of a ruined Earth, battling mutants, miscreants, and the evil Glampire. Coming soon to small screens, comic books, and podcasts. Or at least that's the goal. But how do you go from a crazy idea into a fully formed world of conflicting characters? How does a harebrained discussion become an animated series? That's what we're finding out firsthand. We've recorded the entire development of Lightning Dogs since day one, from the moment of conception to every world-building session and planning meeting, and the journey is still ongoing. Tune in as we create the world of the Lightning Dogs live.
Welcome to Lightning Dogs. Oh! Oh! Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Doug.
Hi, I'm Tony.
Hey, it's Max.
And we're going to be talking about vehicles today. We've been doing a little bit of production and emails and so on. Max was sending us all kinds of stuff. Man, the last design that you sent for the, like, caravan style.
Yes. I was going to say, I feel bad that I've rarely, if ever, responded to the emails. I want you to know I've seen every single one. I love them all. So please forgive me for
Daddy
not responding.
Daddy still loves you.
Yes, yes.
What Max had done was a sketch featuring the three Lightning Dog vehicles. The Fido, Brutus, and Rover circled up and camping out amidst the wastes. It was one of our first glimpses at the vehicles being grounded in a real scene. Outside of our own imaginations, of course. And for this episode, we ourselves were camped out, gathered around a micro-recorder going over Max's latest illustrations. It had been a couple of months since we'd last gotten together in person to discuss the vehicles, but in the meantime, everyone but me had been very active via email sharing new concepts and ideas. In this episode, we're honing in on the direction we want to take our remaining two vehicles, the large battle tram, the Brutus, and the light scout vehicle, the Rover. We also explored new concepts for Halloween Jack's signature ride. We're going to reference a lot of art and a lot of neat real-world vehicles, so after you've listened, or while you're listening, be sure to hit up this episode's page to see what we've cooked up and some of the awesome stuff we've referenced. So, where'd we leave off?
We're like mostly done with the lightning rod.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we've talked about...
Are we done with the lightning rod?
Well, Doug said he had like a few little minor adjustments he wanted to make, like the height of the roof scoop and stuff, which is all easy to tweak.
Those are all smaller.
As far as I could tell.
Yeah, those are smaller nitpicks. As far as the main aesthetic and like the direction we're going in, that's pretty much it.
I've been working off the assumption that it's sort of fundamentally sound, like the silhouette is good and the sort of basic idea. So I've moved on to some other things. We've done a bunch of lightning rig stuff, we've been kind of tentatively calling it, which is the sort of mothership, the big rig, the kind of support vehicle that they all kind of rally around.
Brutus,
breaker, canine.
Some of the conversation to fill everybody in that we've had is that we've settled on a truck that is more like an RV instead of a semi-truck. So it's not a truck with a trailer attached to it. It's a one contiguous, like...
Yeah.
Truck. So it's like a food truck or like a UPS truck, like type of, like, it's got a big back area and a front cab and then stuff on top. It's sort of at a high level what we're dealing with. So I brought out the original sheet of thumbs, because there were some trucks on here too, even though they were a lot more people-oid-ish for the most part. But I kind of want to just put them all in a lineup and just talk about, because even this original block of tanks is kind of more contextually appropriate for this rig situation. I wanted to kind of get all these in a line as we talk about them. This was before we really had any real talk about what we were looking at, right? So some of this stuff is a little more like station wagon-y, some of it's a little more huge construction vehicle truck, and some of it's a little more like a one-ton work pickup kind of situation. So I'll let you guys kind of just browse through, and we can sort of talk about some of the motifs that seem to be recurring, like this DeLorean window is something I've kind of been stuck on. Some of the reference we've been passing around, there's that Playboy Mobile that Doug found.
That's the yacht. The land yacht.
Sid Mead.
It had some really cool like motifs, like swoopy forward-facing angles that seemed almost more like a powerboat kind of thing to me, but they were neat, very deco. And so you've got some things here that are sort of in the range of snub nose, like Optimus Prime-ish things. Some things are a little more like long front, long hood, war rig situation from Fury Road, maybe, in here, which I finally saw the other day.
Oh, wow.
I know.
So these were designs that were not influenced by it.
No, I'd only just seen it. I haven't done anything since I saw it the other day. That's probably the best Road Warrior movie, but it's still the most art-directed, I think. So, like, everything is very cool in context, but it lacks that authenticity of just, like, here's something some weird Australian guy built. Because in the first one, you know, they just bought that car off a dude. Like, it was just like it was. They just bought it, put it in the movie, fake supercharger and everything. So, I mean, that's present in those earlier ones. That it seems to be kind of lost in the new one, but the new one was pretty good. I liked it quite a bit.
So, are you saying it was mediocre?
No, it was way better than that. But Bullet Farmer, that's a Tropic Thunder thing, right?
Oh, Bullet Farmer, motherfucker! He's a lead farmer. Motherfucker!
The first round of trucks, I guess the earliest round of trucks were in these really thumbnail-sized rigs. And those ones, as you mentioned earlier, they do seem more like people-oid vehicles. I love how they look kind of like bizarre junker wagons. Like, they're really cool. Especially, so many of them have cranes.
Yeah.
And it's such a great feature for people-oids to have, like, living as scavengers.
Yeah.
In the context of the Lightning Dogs, there's one that kind of looked like those weird deco police vehicles that they had in Batman the Animated Series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it was probably the strongest start towards where it ended up gravitating.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the next page, the first page is more people-oid stuff. This would be like more stuff I could see being on Domus.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I was trying to figure out where we actually wanted to take it. What was going to feel battle-ready and like at the same time, it wasn't just good for the context of the Lightning Dogs, but also like in the action figure-ready idea. And I really think that you've nailed it in the most recent design, where it's got like a fold-out camper thing, and it's like, it's such a simple, like, you know, your parents may have a fold-out camper car thing, but when the Lightning Dogs have it, you're like, no, that's a playset, and that's such a good idea.
Well, like, also makes sense in the context of a show, because it's like a mobile base. They set up, it could be a mobile lab or a repair garage.
That's kind of where I've settled. Once we decided this thing wasn't like a pickup truck or, like, it's an enclosed back, you know, sort of single vehicle thing. And as far as that goes, like, I've really been looking at the Dakar support trucks that they run. So, like, there's this rally race they run through Africa, and it's usually run with trucks and motorcycles and cars and whatever. But then, like, you're a sort of mobile mechanic that follows you around. They race those, too. And so they have these huge... Yeah, they do. They have, like, these huge 5-ton, 6-wheeled trucks. And they're all, like, you know, 3,000 horsepower trucks. And, like, they've got them, like, exo cages. And, like, they just race those as well. So there's, like... And so not? They just, like, they race to the next checkpoint. Because no one can touch the car except the driver or something, in WRC, at least. I'm not sure what the Dakar situation is. But they clearly have support trucks that are full of tools and parts and stuff in the back. But it's also, like, your whole crew is on this thing. And they're racing to get to the next sort of end of stage before you do, or after you do, so they can meet you there and give you gas and tires and whatever. And so, like, that's its own series that they run, is the support truck series. And there's, like, purpose-built trucks for that. And there's some Russian truck that just dominates every
year. Beautiful. That's so... It makes so much sense, and it's so cool.
So as far as it goes...
Essentially everybody who is sitting there going, well, we're just waiting for them.
It's interesting to see what that type of vehicle has sort of evolved into, from just being a sort of place to keep your tools to also being a sort of mobile command center. So, like, in my head, a lot of these designs you'll see, like, after I kind of settled on that, have, like, extra wheels on top, strapped down to the roof, this sort of cargo situation on top, you know?
Yeah.
And in the back, the idea that I've been having is sort of they've got, like, you know, a sort of future tech 3D printer where it's like they could just spit out some situational thing. And so it's just got some 5-axis machine in the back that's just 3D printing up out of metal shavings or something, whatever they need that episode, you know, maybe.
Like, cutting it with crystals and shit.
Or whatever, yeah. Like, so that type of stuff in the back, you know, where you could have whatever you need. And the thing that you're responding to, Kat, the sort of extendable kind of interior space, the square footage extender, you know, it's just one of those things where it comes out and then, like, the supports go out and then, like, it just doubles the square footage of your interior when you're parked. And so that idea of, like, this is where they all just kind of hang out and live or whatever when it's parked, it seems so obvious once, you know, like you say, like, once you're like, oh, yeah, I'm into that. And then it'd be so easy to do as a toy. This could be open on the toy, so you could just slap dudes in there, you know what I mean, or whatever. Like
the roof would flip open that way, and you could just, and the whole interior would be open.
Like all the Millennium Falcon playsets.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that kind of thing.
The cab is almost a completely clear enclosure. Which is neat, because it makes sense for, like, a thing that's big enough to put two action figures in there side by side. That makes sense that it would have that kind of room.
It's very referential to the G.I. Joe Snowcat, I think, which, if you're not familiar with that toy, it's like the half-track that snow job the Rob Paulsen character drove. Which, I don't know how that name got it.
I know. It's ridiculous.
It's got, like, treads on the back, and then it's got wheels in the front, and it's got this very, like, X-Wing-type cockpit, and then on the top it had this missile rack. And then it had torpedoes on skis that would come out, which were amazing. Like, it was a pretty cool-looking vehicle, and it's just, I think a lot of these kind of feel like they have that kind of flavor.
Yeah.
So anyway, that I think a lot of those elements can kind of come together. But you'll see I just started doing like the sort of silhouette of stuff on top without really defining what the stuff is after a while.
It's always a good move.
And also the scale of these things is all over the place. Are these things like Gravedigger style monster trucks, or are these things like
an SUV,
you know, mega machines like clearing out a quarry, you know, type of size, like where it's ridiculous, you know? So putting them all next to each other and defining the scale, or even in terms of a character, would be useful at some point. We're going to have to do that. They can all be in here comfortably in the cab at the same time, maybe, or two of them driving and the rest in the back, or like, or whatever, you know?
To play with the tropes of animation we've got here, I mean, there's so many cases with large-scale vehicles, like the Millennium Falcon, for example, where like the scale is completely off when it comes to the action figure interpretation.
Yeah.
But the toy is able to do just enough to make it like functional and fun. So we should have a cab that seats two action figures for one version, but it might be that it's the full five-seater, like
more like the Millennium Falcon cockpit, where it's, you know, you can have four to five people sitting up there.
So I would say like the scale of this large one, it's land yacht,
bay-wheeled mega mover.
Yeah, like if it was that, but instead of this truck space, it was the other established thing. Like that would be probably my pick for how to proceed with that.
Especially since the idea is that this would not be the one that is the lightning rod. The lightning rod being the one that goes out, sort of like Smokey and the Bandit, you know? Yeah. Like one, this the powerhouse that's like the central hub. It's armored, it's really tough, but it's slow.
Well,
but
with your Fury Road, it's the war rig, right? Like,
yeah.
That same, like everything's sort of circling around this thing and sort of interacting with it, but it's almost like a train, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's not, I am entirely on board with this. I dig that size.
It's kind of cool that Mad Max gave us the trope of the war rig, because I feel people might have more of a basis to say accept this being a primary vehicle for the Lightning Dogs because of that. Right. Prior to that, it might have been a harder sell. You know, because it's like we're doing this project, and it's our project, and we do whatever we want with it. But at the same time, we're also trying to stage it within the parameters of the nostalgic past and so on. And I feel like that would have been a hard sell, was it not for Mad Max.
Well, I guess it depends on what your typical audience members are aware of, right? Because Jason the Wheeled Warriors had the same concept. They had all these, like, four or five, like, runabout vehicles that had a specific weapon on top. And then they had this one thing that had four legs for no reason. And it was walking on four legs. It's this sort of mothership. And all the rest of them would just park in it, you know, like Knight Rider style.
I've only ever seen the intro to that show. I've never actually seen
it. You probably don't need to watch the rest.
That sounds interesting.
That's why it's not good to take inspiration from that show. It's like, well people did it in Jason the Wheel of Warriors, but nobody watched it.
Well, that's the thing. It didn't last long. I think it was a Straczynski joint, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm sure that he came up with that. And it went a couple episodes, and it was very Star Wars inspired or derived, I guess, in that you had this clearly Han Solo looking dude, and you have this space wizard. And he's looking for his dad. And, like, in practice, it was an 80s show, right? Like,
right.
So it just sort of falls apart in that same way they often do. But it also had that weird thing where all the villains were plants. And so, like, they were trying to take over the whole world of plants. And they were, like, going through, like, killing these plant creatures. Like, very reverse Captain Planet in a way that I don't think was intended. I think they were trying to find a weird tentacle villain that wasn't weird, you know?
Right, right.
Whole planets just get choked with these vines. And, like, they have to go through killing these vines. And, like, it's weird, man. Like, the vines are, like, sentient.
Well, that explains why they got all the buzzsaws all over the place.
Well, that's the thing. Those are the bad guys, though. Those are the bad guys with the buzzsaws, I think.
Oh, the bad guy?
Sawboss is the bad guy.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, so all the good guys have, like, a pincher claw, and one of them's got, like, a hammer. And, like, they're, like, construction stuff. And then the bad, like, the, I don't know. But they're neat looking.
Weird.
Like, just on paper, it's cool looking toys. It's cool looking. And the ideas sound neat when you just give the bullets. But, like, from show to show, the scripts are weak, and like it does that for animation that was so popular at the time, or just so available.
I had to look into it. Can confirm, J. Michael Straczynski was the developer. Yeah. Original series run was from September 16th, 1985, to December 13th, 1985.
Yeah, there you go.
And it had 65 episodes!
That's how they did, man.
Yeah, they just ran out every week, you know?
That is insanity.
It's probably worth finding some good ones if you can, or just see what the sort of first hit is and just see it.
Back on topic. At that point, we kind of veered away from the matter at hand and ended up talking about storylines of Superman that aren't even remotely relevant anymore. You can hear that and a bunch of other potentially intriguing asides in our outtakes collections, available to supporters on Patreon. So, yeah, back to Brutus.
I love this design. The thing I like even more about this is that this doesn't look like a separate cab. Like, this is all one big piece where you could walk. Like, there's a path that you could walk. Like, almost like a, dare I say, Lone Star's
Winnebago.
Yeah, like an RV,
you know,
right?
Yeah, where you could...
I think weaponizing an RV or sort of armoring up an RV is not a bad way to think about it.
With the big picture you have of all of them together, like, I remember originally when I'm talking about, like, when I was like, oh, the land yacht, and championing that, that's, like, exactly what you did with the front screen here, which I still like the design of. Mm. But if we're talking the big, larger scale vehicle, that almost military tank slit but large cockpit where five people can be in, like, if we were doing this scale, I would stick with that. But if we're going bigger, yeah, then definitely that other cockpit design. Because the other cool thing about the previous cockpit design is that you could just lift that roof up.
Like a
just,
toilet seat or a
yeah, like,
trash
yeah,
can lid.
Put the characters in there, not in the toilet, but in the toy instead. That'd be very
or
clear.
If you want to piss off your parents and create the water play set, go ahead, put them in the toilet. And
right, so
flush somewhere a few times.
I don't necessarily like when the wheels are outside of it. I like it when it's sort of inlined to give it a kind of tank-like streamlined effect that's mm-hmm. like, if they have to, it's a battering ram and they don't have to worry about the wheels coming out.
That's a good point. I did like the big wheels, but that seems like we could do yeah. stronger sequences.
I think
that.
You're either looking at like a monster truck presentation or you're looking at like a dump truck, right, where they're
yeah.
big and they're like a lot of suspension travel, but they're tucked.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool.
I personally am in favor of the eight wheels versus six. And I know it's not necessarily the case, but it says more power to me. It says... Sure.
Well, it says it's built tough, you know?
Yeah.
And it's made...
That this has fail-safes upon fail-safes.
It has redundancies, yes.
Yeah. And it's not going to corner worth shit, but once you get it going in a straight line, get the fuck
out. Yeah,
of
out in the open wasteland? Oh, don't even try.
Okay, so I think that's a good direction to go. I started going into some Halloween Jack that I've kind of been dubbing the Jack Wagon. Got a few of those.
Nope,
to look
done.
At.
That's it.
That sounds so raunchy.
It does.
And that's why I'm sticking with it.
You guys want to move into the Jack Wagon?
Sure.
Let's go
yeah,
to the
man.
Jack
let's,
Wagon.
Let's go to
all right,
the
so,
Jack Wagon.
So now we're looking at a sheet that my daughter tore on accident. She was flipping pages.
This one stinks.
These are kind of all coming from a place of like more of a traditional hot rod kind of, but sort of you wastelanded up.
I love the jacked fucking wheels on number two.
These are yeah. these are diagonal wheels
so
in the front. How did they, that's a real thing, right?
Yeah. It can be. It's a thing in racing where if you can tilt like camber, for those who may not know, is like your wheel at zero camber is totally vertical.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have negative camber, you bring the tops in towards each other and the bottoms kind of stick out. And there's this new movement now called the stance movement, which is like one of my personal pet peeves for terminology. Like when you stance a car as a verb, it just makes me angry. Like, but to a point, increasing the negative camber is good for taking corners, bad for longevity of your tires on straightaway. But like when you take a corner, your suspension travels and you end up with a bigger contact patch, which is the part of your tractor. Mm-hmm. So you get better traction going around the corner. And in the drift scene, when that first started taking off, one of the ways that they decided that was going to make the back end break loose going around a corner was to get a lot of front grip and not a lot of rear. So you'll see on these early drift videos from Japan, they'll have like really straight up and down rear tires, and just the front tires are just dumped in. So that Oni camber, the demon camber they used to call it, is like that. And it's become just a stance camber now, where like they're making tires specifically for it. It's just like, what are you guys doing?
We're taking corners, yo. We're going nowhere fast.
We're parking hard is what we're doing. We're parking and our cars look cool sitting still, and that's all we're doing. It's one of the things I don't really get into, but this is when I discovered this company that's making engine couplers to bolt two engines together and make what amounts to a 16-cylinder engine out of two V8s.
Okay.
That kind of thing. So this one's a little more hot rod, like open top, not as much body work.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to find a way to do two engines, one powering this wheel, one powering that wheel. So you have kind of like two front-wheel drive engines only powering one wheel side by side. I don't know that I was 100% happy with where that was going.
And to try to describe this, two engines side by side.
It's what
Max just said,
yeah,
but like imagine that, okay?
The plan was to see how many engines could you conceivably fit on a car, right? So it was like if you give one complete like 4-cylinder engine for every wheel or something, you know, like there were some cars in the 50s and 60s in Formula One that actually had like a V8 regular way, then upside down, there was another one, and they had some gear situation in between to make an H16. And so it was like the most ridiculous engine, but it looks awesome when you see pictures of it. You're like, wow, that thing is really great. So it just looks neat. I don't know how successful it was. It's so overcomplicated. But you know, this idea that there's probably tons of engines laying around and maybe there's enough axles, maybe there's not. I could see this being a thing you'd see in a road warrior car. Like,
well, I can also see Jack sitting there going, I need more power. Yeah, how do I get more power? More engines.
More engines. I like this kind of like 30s Grand Prix car kind of flavor about it with the raised exhaust that goes above the wheel off the side. and it's got this cool kind of like midget racer back silhouette. Mm-hmm. Then this one I like because it's got this kind of like upper spoiler situation, which isn't a very common touch on these cars, but I think it probably could be if you were coming from this place of sort of future with this like old school shape, but with things we know now that we didn't know then. And it's got these kind of fairings over the fronts of the wheels, which one of your big problems on open wheel cars is you can't control the airflow over the wheels at all. I don't know how much the people had to know about this, but I mean, you could see it being there for rock purposes and stuff.
I mean, they'd learn the hard way.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing, right? Like, at the speeds that you could get up to on a wasteland-type surface, you're probably never going to get 200 miles an hour, right? But you could easily get to 90 pretty quick. So there's this practical limit of how fast you can go, but acceleration becomes interesting, I think, in that situation where you've got to really get going as fast as you can get quickly. This one's got, like, a sort of still gas tank in the back, which is sometimes, like, a thing you see in, like, Rat Roser make it look like it's a moonshine still, you know, but, like... And I've seen some that actually run on alcohol where you can drink it. Like,
oh my God.
I see people do it just to be funny. Like, you can do that kind of thing.
The 1930s racer meets Rat Rod in some way has been like a good thing for Jack just because he is that rockabilly mixture of stuff.
I agree. And I think you can do a lot with that space that hasn't been done yet because it's sort of a largely forgotten era.
I am going to fight tooth and nail to keep the Oni caper on whatever car he has, because that is...
I think that that's such a striking image. So, people would be dazzled
also,
by
it. It is so perfect for Jack. Jack is just a little off.
Well, that, but also, if you're a peopleoid and you're in your regular peopleoid village and you're doing your thing and Jack rolls up looking like a pimp and he's just like, all right, everyone does what I say now. It's like, oh shit, better do. He's got the crooked wheels. We got to do what he says. You know, it's like there's an element of
he's clearly crazy.
Well, he knows just this much about how to keep motors together more than the peopleoids do. And that he's doing that for a reason.
And I also think the 16 cylinder engine is a great idea.
Yeah.
If we can combine this look, Five's look, two's tires, and the idea of slapping as many engines as you can possibly fit on the vehicle, because that's how Jack understands how to make things go faster.
But it has to be functional, too. It can't just be like his stretch limo that he himself is driving.
Well, I kind of want to play a little bit more with this idea, too, because in the 60s, it was real common to put the engine behind the driver for weight purposes.
Mm.
So you would see these big mountain engines at the back, and the driver would be just in front, and then this really long, like, narwhal, like, front chassis, because like the cars would just wheelie up, so you'd have this.
It's a drag racer.
Long nose, and so that custom with a K culture kind of look, I think, is cool. But like this idea of like two engines but sharing an exhaust manifold, like where it's all like they're rough welds and it's unfinished, but it works. You can tell it works, you know. Mm-hmm. But that idea of like a workaday super part, I think, is interesting to me too. But this one's got like a sort of holster strapped on with a gun, like so, like something you used to see a lot of in the 20s and 30s is like, you know, everything was a work of art, nothing was cheap, everything was handmade, and so like old Porsches would have leather belts like holding the hood shut.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like Alfa Romeos would have leather, like, they call them droop limiters, so like your suspension, if you go over a bump and you jump it right, it'll like unload and the wheels will drop. And your springs might fall out of the perches if it drops too far, you know? So then your springs might fall. And so what you'd do is you'd limit how far the wheel could go. So that way, until you undo that, it'll never go so far that the suspension would fall apart on you from jumping over. So those ideas of, like, sort of what we would consider ludicrous materials, like...
Leather and shit.
Yeah, like leather and just weird Buffalo Soldier kind of stuff of, like, here's most of this works, but the rest of it is all just sort of embellished with these local materials. I think you'd see that. I think it would be something that would be...
That's a really strong premise to lead with, because it makes a lot of sense and is cool.
Something that's functional, but yet is still feeling like it's slapped together. Something that looks like it's intimidating, but it can back up whatever image it's portraying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But something that would also be useful, not just good for straightaways, not just good for turning, but something that you would actually do in the wasteland.
You see a lot of that stuff if you look at taxis in Africa or those trucks they drive in the Philippines, you know, where they're just like... This thing started out as a Land Cruiser, but now it's whatever the word for that is, local, and that means a thing now.
I also really like the crystals sticking out of the
engine. Definitely.
Yeah, I like the exposed engines on these. I think they're cool, but I also like a little bit of fairing in front of it. You'd see this on an old car. You know, we've talked about American Graffiti a few times, but like, you know, you see they usually leave the radiator in the front with a little bit of cowl around it, and they just take the hood and the top off. And I think just something in the front like that, and then you just kind of expose the engine, because you've got these guys who are just every day this thing there about to be broken, you know. After a while,
crystal goes bad, sticking to their crystal.
That's the thing. After a while, you're just like, whatever, I'm just going to fix it. You know, and just leave the hood off or leave the whatever off. You just make it so that it works for you, but you want a little bit of like rock protection or whatever in the front.
Something to hold those headlights up, too.
Yeah, so we like the kind of Oni camber as an idea.
I'm digging open cockpit as well.
Now, do you like the sort of roll cage above, or you like the kind of just
scoop out? I like the scoop out, too. The beauty is that Lightning Dog is clearly, when he gets into its third season, he's going to update his vehicle. Well, it's like, so it can always thing, right? evolve. Like, it can evolve.
I have this idea based on stuff we've talked about where Jack is always trying to be like one better, right? He's not just stuck in his ways. But when he shows up, he's done that thing where he's been the big fish in the small pond so much that he's like...
He's used to it.
Well, he's got a weird car that's just as good as he needs it to be. And now it's just all this like style. And he's like, oh, this isn't working. I got to get serious. You know, he's got
to
like really step
That's up. Why he goes back to Glampire and is like, you need to upgrade my ride,
so
man.
I think that idea of him kind of like starting out with a thing that has a lot of panache, but not a lot of substance, or maybe not as much as it could, is interesting. But there's always like, there could be sort of motifs that carry through that kind of make it so you can easily identify like, oh, that's still a TIE fighter, but that's Vader's TIE fighter. You know what I mean? Right. That thing, like, that makes it different.
Yeah. I think the roll cage might be something we do want to look at, though, for the opportunity to have, say, like, he's driving, but he's got, like, a tiny peopleoid crammed in the cab or something who can, like, you know, pop out the top of it or something with a gun.
But at the same time, I see that Jack, if he was to have somebody like that, would literally just strap someone to an open part of the car and tell him to hold on.
Well, I think as long as the scale of this thing was, like, the grip that all your action figures permanently have, do, and they can just grip it anywhere. Like, this, like, exocage idea, where there's just basically handholds all around the car. It just becomes a thing that people discover through trying it, that, oh, this is exactly what I can do, you know? Like,
That's a fair point.
I think the question is it like a bar or is it like a cage, right? Like,
if we're going in that direction, I'd imagine it mostly being a bar, because I don't imagine Halloween Jack is too afraid of anybody out there. Like, he's not, this isn't his tank. This is his way to get there.
This is his car. It's his daily
driver. Yeah, yeah. It's able to get there quick and to show that he means business. It's not, there's no hidden guns and, you know,
he's always struck me as a very reckless individual.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't give a shit about his own safety necessarily.
Right.
Why is he going to give a shit about the fodder that follows him?
Also, after you encounter the Lightning Dogs and you got to upgrade your ride, maybe the first encounter where he's racing alongside him trying to stop him ends with his car getting flipped over and he's like, get a roll cage on
that. That's the trick, right? The roll cage is really to keep your head from getting squashed, and the roll bar does it to a lesser extent. Usually, if you have one or the other, it's just defined by the rules of your racing series. You got to respect a guy with a roll cage because it signifies his intent to someday flip that car over.
Yeah.
You know? Or to drive it so hard that might happen, I guess.
But. And stunt vehicles where, like, when they want to flip a car, they'll have the piston shoot out the bottom. If he's got one that'll shoot out the top, so when it is flipped over, you're like, aha, we did it! And the Lightning Dogs are like, yay, he flipped over! Boom! It flips over and he's back on the road again. It's like, oh no.
This one didn't get very far, but this one's playing a lot more novelty motifs like we talked about. So it's like skull stuff.
Yeah, that's straight up a 90s.
This is like some skeletal vehicle. Yeah. Right? So I don't know how I feel about that. I like it on the hubcaps, right? Where it's sort of in there.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like a thing.
No, that's, the hubcaps
nice
are
subtle and cool.
I like that better than...
Well, easy enough to just play with the shapes of the stuff on the front itself. You don't need to have it be, oh, he's got a skull on the front, but more like, oh, I see what they're doing with the headlights there.
Yeah. We get those buffalo tyrannosaur. You get a skull of that thing with, like, the horns or whatever.
The buffaranosaur?
Yeah, the buffaranosaur with horns or whatever. That'd be fucking sweet.
So do you guys want to talk about this thing a little bit? Looking at the ATV thing? Like, we haven't really discussed this vehicle, who's going to be on it.
What was the code?
Fido, I
think. Fido, yes. Yeah. Well, the first thing we got to figure out is, do we go ATV four-wheel, three-wheel, or a motorcycle two-wheel?
Well, I've been watching recently a show on Netflix that's interesting called The Long Way Around, where Ewan McGregor and his buddy rode around the world on motorcycles, and it's fascinating, but like, man, he's such a douche nozzle. I had no idea. Like, he's so entitled. Like,
oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah, it's amazing to watch. It really ruined my impression of him as a person, but like, at the same time...
Maybe
like,
it humbled him?
I think it did, because after you get to like episode four... He becomes really like aware of his situation when he's in the middle of Kazakhstan with a broken bike frame. You know, but like, it's like the first episode, he's trying to get free bikes from KTM or BMW, and like KTM won't give him bikes because they have an expert who's done the ride before come out and say, you guys are not going to succeed at this. And like, they're like ripping the KTM posters off the wall. Like, it's not fair. It's like, it's not fair they didn't give you free motorcycles. Like, Ewan McGregor of Star Wars. Like, you know, he's like, come on, dude. Like, they do these video diaries. He acknowledges that it's like a first world reaction. He gets it after a point. It's just funny to watch. But then once I actually get out on the road, it's also really interesting because some weird things happen where, like, they get a cameraman and they have, like, a road crew and trucks behind them. The cameraman's bike breaks the frame. And so they take it to some little town in the middle of, I think they're in, by this point, they're in Mongolia. And they get a dude to weld it up, but they had, like, make a splint, basically, out of two wrenches and, like, zip ties and stuff.
So
you could limp it in, you know?
Oh, man.
And so they get a MIG welder, which is when you just ground the frame and then you have, like, a stick and you... basically arc it, right? And so, like, it feeds tons of voltage and it melts into the frame. But they didn't, I guess, disconnect the battery, so it fried the ABS brakes.
Oh,
so they've got no brakes now. They're like, oh, great, you fixed the frame, but you can't. The bike's now useless, you know? And so he has to go buy some crappy Russian bike out of this black market, like Street Fighter II, the movie. Like, I'm not kidding. It looks just like that. And they're, like, walking around with some weird American, like, exchange student that just happens to live there. And it's an interesting travelogue in a way, you know? Like,
What's this called?
It's called The Long Way Around. It's, like, a 10-part series, which is basically, like, watching their vacation videos. But they get on some legitimate adventures, you know? Like, and so, like, they go and they buy this Russian crappy knockoff Yamaha style. It looks like a 60s, 70s era Yamaha bike where it's just, like, one cylinder, one tube. It's very light. Doesn't have all the cool storage containers and stuff that their starting bikes had. But, like, then they end up in this quagmire. They're just in this bog out in the middle of nowhere. Almost probably literally in the middle of nowhere. Like, middle of Mongolia somewhere, like, where, like, you'd send somebody to die if they were a prisoner in Russia. And you're watching Ewan and this guy Charlie Borman, who I guess is an English actor that he knows. They're, like, riding through the mud, and it's, like, it looks like Dragon Ball Z, like, fight zones, you know, or, like, this weird blast of things. I mean, you know, you think that's made-up terrain, but it kind of isn't. Like, Eastern China kind of looks like that, you know? But, like, every two, like, 3, 4, 5 feet they go, the bike just falls over, and they're so big and heavy that it takes two people to put it back up. And the cameraman on his crappy Russian bike is just cruising along because it's so light and small that it's, like, it's, you know what I mean? Anyway, so, like, some interesting realizations happen where you've got what, like, the first world thinks is an adventure bike. You know, just completely failing next to this crappy knockoff whatever bike that just is whatever. And it's just, it's like the classic Russian technology, bury it in the mud and dig it up and it'll still whatever.
The Kalashnikov versus the MP4.
It's exactly like that, you know, and it looks like it's like a bootleg version of something else. But like, I mean, he's just like, oh, it's great, just tooting along. And like, at a certain point, like, they're getting mad at him because his bike that he just bought on the fly with pocket change, you know, because the exchange rate, like, he bought it for like $1,000 US or something. And like, they've got these $17,000 piece BMWs that they're driving, you know? It's just...
With that in mind, I think I'm going to lean... For one, definitely, I think we're going to lean four-wheel. Simply because, as you were just pointing out, weight is less of a problem when you've got a wider base.
Yeah, super true.
And if we're talking about something that's going to have to scout over unknown terrain, we definitely want something that has a little bit more... And we can have it so that it's still relatively narrow, but, you know, keep it four-wheel. I like the profile that you've done in Circle the Wagons a lot.
There's a G.I. Joe vehicle that Tomax and Zaymont drove, the little ATVs that are blue and they've got a big gun down the side. And it's very comparable in idea to this, but it's not exactly the same. But I mean, that's been a successful action figure toy before. There's they rode like a quad, you know. So this thing right here, as I think about it, like, so you can see it's got the engine kind of down below, and you ride this thing prone and you kind of have the hand grips down low, and like, I can see that being pretty cool and like a sort of jump off point, when perhaps literally to jump onto things. I don't like the overall stretch of it. I'm not at this point so tied to this thing. Has to legit be a thing that could work in the real world, as long as it looks like it's
looks
got
cool.
Kind of parts that are neat. So
the tumbler from Batman, essentially.
Yeah, you know, just like the tumbler from Batman. That's my favorite thing.
The motorcycle bit.
That was my least favorite thing. The motorcycle was the dumbest thing in Batman to me. But I think you could make the case for either. My initial reaction was for a quad as well. But watching this like sort of motorcycle adventure, I mean, bikes are cool toys, you know? Like, I don't know if you remember those like flywheel-based ones where you pull the ripcord.
Oh, yeah.
And, like,
love
you spin
them.
The flywheel and they just go zooming down.
The
like,
Tron cars.
Yeah,
actually,
the Tron cars.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, there's been neat toys of either thing. I think there's, like, just something to be said for sort of, like, jumping on the back of a bike as a sort of impromptu passenger. That's kind of a neat visual.
Which begs a question. If it's a bike, is it something that could go, that could actually fit inside the Brutus?
I think easily, yeah. Or on the top or whatever. So,
and depending on what kind of bike, we could even almost have it be, like, portable.
Yeah, for
almost
sure.
Where it'd fold in on itself, like both wheels would be beside each other, and then you just pull
so
and it would.
Honda made that for a while. You used to be able to get what in Japan this car called the Honda City Turbo, which was a very small 2-door Civic hatchback, like smaller even than that, kind of probably a little bigger than a Smart. And one of the optional accessories was a straight up fold up motorcycle that folded up and lived in the trunk.
Oh my god!
And you could take it out and unfold it, just
almost like how you could put a bicycle. On the back of a car, could you put the Fido on the back of the lightning rod?
Or even multiple Fidos. If we're talking fucking foldable motorcycle.
That's the thing. Look, so when I asked the question, are we going to go ATV or like motorcycle? I was going to say that I'm leaning motorcycle only because we want to go smaller scale, really zippity, really fast, quick, no armor per se. You're completely exposed, and it's just sort of for recon almost.
Here's the bike that went in the back of the Honda City, and here it is in the back of the Honda City.
It's an adorable little scooter.
It's amazing. Like it's like
it looks like one of Cable's guns.
Yeah, it does. But then unfolded, it's like, you know. So, I mean, these have been gray marketed a few times. I've seen one come up for sale in the States with the bike. But, like, they're all over Japan, so it's just one of those things.
Also, this is, again, being way too blue sky thinking, but, like, if Lightning Dogs was a popular enough thing, getting kids out on a bicycle wouldn't be that bad of an idea.
It's like, yeah, have one of the Fidos that will look... It's close enough to a bicycle that with, like, a decal on the side...
Where a Lightning Dogs bicycle wouldn't sound like a bad idea.
Well, maybe that's something we could, you know, pursue down the line of maybe kid builds their own thingamajig. That could be interesting for something that's, like, you know, small, like an electric scooter that's foldable or whatever.
Yeah, I've kind of been on a bike tip lately. Anyway, I just discovered this thing that Suzuki put out at the 1985 Tokyo Motor Show. This is called the Falco Rustico, which is a bizarre name, but it's actually apparently Latin for gerfalcon, which the Hayabusa is the Japanese for that same bird.
Mm-hmm.
So this bike ultimately got made. But what you're looking at right there in 1986 at the Tokyo Motor Show is this white bike with a very horizontal front fork with a woman dressed like Kay from Akira standing next to it. The fictional specifications of that bike, which apparently never got made, were that it has a what they call a square four-cylinder, which I'd never heard of before, powering some sort of hydraulic pump that has no chain or anything. It actually powers the wheels with hydraulics. So it's all-wheel drive. It's got electric brakes. I mean, you're looking at what is intended to be a production Akira bike, like based on the specifications.
That is amazing.
I'm in love with the windscreen.
Yeah. Like I am picturing all of that for Fido at this point.
That's what
where
I'm saying.
So there are very few moving parts per se.
Yeah.
Where all you got to do is essentially unfold it. Because I'm picturing like instead of collapsing the way that the one on the Honda City did, where it was essentially into like a little box.
For practicality, we need to get away from the folding. Unfortunately, I think it can fit inside something. It could even like. So pop out a bit
when you say folding. There's different ways we could do this. Folding where it's like it folds into like a suitcase and it completely unfolds, or like a Razor scooter with one motion. Clink the thing. Like the bike is basically solid, but the handlebars are like. So if I'm making hand motions here, so you're not gonna really see if you're listening. But if the bike is a basic shape that's kind of brick shaped, but then you just pull up the handles and then the wheels kind of extend just a little bit.
So
you can store that inside the Brutus or whatever. So it's not really a fold up bike so much as a bike that can, like how Harrier jets or whatever can close their wings when they're on the aircraft carrier.
The F-14.
So the
F-14, thank you. Not Harrier. What am I saying?
In one of the later Robotech seasons, they had that thing called the Hurricane, I think.
Yes!
It was like a
that's
bike.
That's what I'm thinking.
It would turn into power armor around you. And it started life as a sort of like escape pod, and it became a thing that was cool. So I think the hover tanks had them in them.
Yeah.
And then they would just kind of jump out on them and escape. And they had toys for that and everything. It was pretty cool.
And the way I'm picturing it working is essentially just taking a damn crystal, shoving it into one port, and that crystal just powers it as far as it can go. You take that one, because these are not meant to be long-running things. You just take one crystal, shove it in, and then roll.
So I've been sitting here in front of some of the earlier sketches, the whole discussion, and next to the Trapped Globe cruisers we were playing with earlier, which are just cool machines, like really, really cool. And I don't think there's any room to do that for this initial run. However, there is an item that's kind of like a three-wheeler. It's got some kind of blade things out front. I'm not really sure.
Or those? I thought those were wheels.
These were actually three skinny wheels that were sort of like
gripping
They made me think that if we take this route of, say, let's say, Kaneda's bike from Akira, that has that great movement to it, the front section and that pivot, laying low in a vehicle, the motorcycle element, but something that has enough width to survive the wasteland, basically. If we took this idea and mashed it up with everything else we've been talking about, maybe something that kind of like allows it to, let's say, whatever makes it a three-wheel, whatever part has the two wheels on it, whatever side that is, let's say the front, could maybe like squish in and then it could pop out and like the terminal comes out and they get in and then they like sink back down. Something that just would look cool as hell to use. So when it comes out, when the shot starts and it's a dark shot and then the blinding white comes in of them like opening the cab and it unfolds and there's like steam and they pull it out, you're like, wow, this is cool. Like this is their smallest vehicle and it's also maybe the thing I want to ride in the most.
We could even have it so that the wheel in the front is actually two wheels melded together so that we have moments where it's just a motorcycle, moments where it splits into two separate arms, giving us that width.
To go over like rocky stuff or whatever, like rocky terrain?
Yeah, that's the thing. I've seen that.
Remember we were talking about that?
It's even been done before.
Leno's got a bike that is called the Tomahawk. It's got a Viper V10 in it. The way they did the wheels was instead of doing one mega wide wheel, Because you can't really lean a bike like that. You know, like the bike in Batman is unturnable because the wheel's so wide, you can't actually do anything with that.
Yeah.
But the way you get around that is you have independently sprung skinnier wheels. So they have the contact patch of a wide wheel, but they have the articulation of a narrow wheel. So you'll see it has multiple skinny wheels on it that just sort of in silhouette from a distance look like one mega wide wheel.
Interesting.
There was a video that we posted somewhere. I don't remember where it was.
Oh, that spider car thing?
Yes, the spider car. Yeah, and then we talked about like a spider. We even talked about a spider motorcycle thing where like the arms would fold up. What if we just mix both of those together where this isn't spider themed? It's not literally a spider, but yet it's a piece of technology from Domus where it can be folded together. When you need speed, you fold them together. It looks like a motorcycle, but with fat tires. But when you need to go over the rocky, you know, terrain of the wasteland, you can just, they just pop out, like, you know, on those arms. And then each one of them, like the spider car, can roll up over big things here and there, like a Mars rover almost. But then tying into the aesthetic of the spider legs and stuff like that, maybe then when Halloween Jack or another villain sees it, goes, I want that. And then the only explanation is to get the spider, to literally get a spider version of that.
Or to literally get a spider animal.
Yeah.
And like,
because that's the one, that's the, because if you think of it this way, like, oh, the kid is out scoping up to no good or whatever and gets out too far and they're like, there's one of the lightning dogs, get him. But the kid on the bike is way too fucking fast and it moves like a, it pop out like a spider. It moves like, what is that thing? Because they would have no clue of what kind of technology that was. So their direct response to that would be like, next time she comes around, we're going to be ready. And then of course, kid's like, oh, they'll never get me. I'm on my Fido. There's no way they're going to get me. And then she gets too cocky. And then
what
of course,
are your guys' thoughts on having that be? If that's going to be kids, should that be some sort of Domus extreme sport? Like a rollerblade analog?
Yes.
Oh man.
And then in that way, should it be sort of look like a toy? Like,
but yes.
Like just throwing that out there into the ether to see what that feels like. But well, like something along those lines that's clearly like a novelty, like propulsion toy.
You know? I think it'll have a military version.
Yeah.
The context here is that, you know, they have to trust eventually, like we say it's kids because we know that eventually that's going to be what happens, can't start that way. Maybe she builds a vehicle that like pertains to whatever the extreme rollerblade version of motocross is in the dog world, you know? Yeah. Like
I'm just thinking about like on Tailspin, you had Kit's sky surfboard thing. And
then, yeah.
Like, you know, like you always have the rollerblade, you know, hero or whatever that's always got the one.
She does also have rollerblade or whatever.
That's
so, like,
true.
You did like the
water ski rope on the back and she's on rollerblades while someone else is driving. Like, that's the extreme sport.
If you like Jet Set Radio that and you have them be powered and she ends up being like the Wheelers from Return to Oz, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you could make it cooler than that, but you can see like sort of like a hand one and like feet ones. And then, like, have you ever seen those, like, rollerblade suits they wear?
To go downhill. Yeah.
Chan did that in a movie.
Yeah. I mean, like, just there's all kinds of interesting, like, weird things people try to do to be extreme and cool. But, like the squirrel suit for skydiving, whatever.
Yeah.
Just thinking about it, like, I guess you could do either way. Like, I think there's room for all that stuff, whether this is, like, the vehicle or not. I think there's probably room for that. There's probably room for a collapsible motorcycle or a sort of supplemental, like, runabout thing.
We might be talking about several things this point.
I kind of think we are. We probably want a quad that's the other vehicle. And then you probably want just some miscellaneous stuff they can use to do cool things with.
If the wheels popped in together and it became a motorcycle, yeah. I think to me, that's like, I think that's the ultimate.
That's Fido.
That's to me, that's Fido because it can do whatever. But if we feel like it's better just to focus on doing like a quad first and then if Kid builds her own motorcycle, that I'm open to that as well.
What you described with the spider vehicle and that kind of scenario of like, whoa, what is that?
Like that's, it's like the spider mode is only when it's right. in quad.
Yeah,
wheel
I
mode.
Mean, that to me like does read like a really strong military reconnaissance vehicle.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And only when you need to get away fast do the wheels come in and then you just kick ass.
Have you ever seen like really high performance snowmobiles?
We're in Florida.
Yeah, I was gonna say we all live in Florida.
It's like a thing where they're so fast you can drive them across water.
What? But I mean, like a tread or
well,
like
they're tracked in the back and skis in the front, and like they're just like
they're that
just
powerful.
Small engines are just so much. Like you can get a jet ski with more horsepower than your car probably right now, right? Like because they're turbocharging them and everything, just like they are cars. And they do the same thing as snowmobiles. You can get nitrous on your snowmobile. Like, you can do whatever you want. Like, this is a legend, right?
It's a death machine if you put nitrous on a snowmobile.
Well, they race them and they do all this and that. But, like, you can get going so fast, when you hit water, it'll stay up on a plane and go until you let off the gas. And then it'll, you know what I mean? But, like, as long as you're moving, like, it's like a thing. And there was actually that video recently somebody did it with a motorcycle where they were, like, surfing on it. Where they put skis and, like, they were using the wheel to power it. And it was going so fast that it hit the water and they were just cruising around like a jet ski on their dirt bike. Like it was bananas.
Oh
like,
my God.
You know, so like that idea of like a thing that's kind of like got a tread in the back and then sort of like something in the front, probably wheels or something that's a little more articulated.
Mm-hmm.
So it can do the thing you're talking about where it kind of like, oh, let's get aero, you know, and then like it kind of gets a little more like, let's spread out to
navigate this rough terrain. But in the back, you've got this one sort of drive wheel that's kind of constant. I think is kind of where I'm thinking at the moment. And then you kind of get that neat non-traditional three, like the tripod kind of shape without having necessarily the full spider car kind of rip off.
Yeah,
you know, but it's got sort of that articulated front, and in the back is a little bit more.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
I could see that being cool.
I'm feeling it.
I mean, then villain stuff, we're kind of zeroed in on Halloween Jack. Who else needs one? Do we want to do just a sort of another?
Well, we always toyed with the idea of Glampire having something, but that is a very different style of vehicle than, you know, than everything else.
Yeah, we
picture the monsters.
Well, what?
Not, I don't think that's like Glampire that we've been talking about so far.
I'm aware.
I can see the monsters of the Monkey Mobile, like all that George Barris stuff, is really Halloween Jack looking, you know, where it's that over the top pipes sticking out.
Sort of gothic, you know? Slightly, you know, exaggerated. Yes. For Glampire, we were always talking a bit more Lamborghini, 80s crystal influence, something that's like he doesn't even drive it. He just sits in it and it takes him where he needs to go.
I guess the other question is, how much Halloween Jack crew do you anticipate seeing to the point where do they need like a sort of sidekick vehicle? Do they need a sort of, like, do we want to do the Ghoul Bus and just have all the rest of them ride behind him in that? And they're smoking the abandoning bat where you've got Jack out front and you've got the Ghoul Bus of like...
I've always viewed it as a really motley motorcycle gang.
Like the Dreadnoughts.
Yeah, you know, motorcycle with a sidecar, that's for sure got a place in there.
And also, it's funny because I just pictured this too, and it might be a dumb idea, but... The Ghoul Bus scenario where some of them, because you mentioned motley motorcycle crew, I picture that some of these guys have been able to scrounge up engines, some of them, they don't necessarily have crystals to go around for everybody, but the Ghoul Bus, they've always got something running, that's always running, and whatever motorcycles aren't running, they literally attach to a tow in the back, and it's just a crew of them sitting there, not actually driving, but just kind of being dragged.
What if there was the reverse, and they were the horses pulling somebody's chariot with motorcycles, and like, you know, they just dragged around something that did some useful service? We probably have pretty strong ideas about what a Ghoul Bus could be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might be like, so you got a Howling Jack and then you got a Ghoul Bus. We could just do analogs, right? Like, and just say, okay, well, they've got something like this too, whether that's a bike or something. And it's just okay, now you've got a sort of people-led version of all the things.
Well, I really liked all the construction. Like, I don't think the theme of them is construction, but the fact that they would want to get a crane because they got to dig something out of the sand.
Yeah, like, you know? The one that's like a straight-up crane... attached to a
with a railroad engine.
That is a very powerful visual.
I also really like this one with the hooks, where I remember we were talking before, like maybe that was a Lightning Dog vehicle where you could maybe ride the bike up on the back. But if we take this idea of the open back with hooks and cranes and stuff, if you could attach, I'm thinking opposite of Mad Max now where they got the pole cats, but instead you got them dangling on this, you could jump on another vehicle, and if they kick you off, you just zip your back. Like, this is like a safety line for anyone.
That as Halloween Jack's mobile garage, where they are literally retooling.
Could do that too, If this follows the war tribe as it moves, and if Halloween Jack's thing breaks down,
that's
sort of like Spy Hunter, they pull it up. So while everything keeps moving, like a pit stop, where the Indy cars, they are trying to fix it really quick so we can get back on the road while they're all still moving.
No, exactly. No, that's what I was talking about, where you just see like the welding sparks arcing off the back of this thing.
While they're constantly fixing something that pulls in.
And that's a really strong idea, but I don't think it plays into the architecture of how it makes the most sense to structure Jack's situation.
Not to start with. By the time Jack is like, I need to upgrade my vehicle, they eventually build something like that. And then
or this could be some sort of mobile chop shop where they just like, every time they find something that seems neat, they just put it on the back and strip it down. And
true, And that could be either someone who's affiliated with Jack or working for Jack, but not necessarily like an offense. Something that could become an offensive vehicle.
I don't think this thing shows up every episode.
I
think it'd be neat to just kind of be like, oh, that's a cool idea.
So now we call the character the Butcher, and we take the hook motif and we use those almost like meat hooks as their partner.
Yeah, that's pretty strong.
Captain Scrap type situation too, right?
True.
Where he's just traveling the world, tearing things down and getting the useful junk out of it.
Those new wasteland ideas, we'll come back to those. But the night was drawing on, and that was where we wrapped the session, closing with the decision that the three Lightning Dogs vehicles and the Jack Wagon would be what we prioritized for the pitch Bible. If it was a toy line, it would be our first wave vehicle set. That's a plan that we've stuck with, and now in present day, we're able to show off Max's amazing handiwork. Paving the way for our pitch Bible, we've just put out an art book featuring the culmination of all of these vehicle concepts and all of their various production designs. Lightning Dogs Sketchbook 1 is a 36-page comic-sized collection of all of our favorite Lightning Dogs concept art from Tony, Cap, Max, and Local Shop, including character profiles for all of the Lightning Dogs, as well as Glampire, Jack, Queen Lich, various Wastelanders, and supporting cast members, and, of course, the vehicles. The sketchbook actually has a fair amount of information we haven't covered yet on the show. So if you want a preview of things to come, as well as a super rad tome of Lightning Dog's awesomeness, head over to the Nerdy Show store and pick up a copy. Physical versions are $5, and the digital version is $3. But if you're giving on Patreon at $5 or more, you've actually had access to a digital copy for a while now. We debuted the sketchbook to the public at HeroesCon in Charlotte, North Carolina, where we met a few fans and hopefully made a bunch of new ones. We were delighted by the number of people who recognized us from our appearance on War Rocket Ajax. Heroes was our first convention working at a table devoted especially to Lightning Dogs, and spoiler alert, maybe? If you're listening to this as these episodes are releasing, you'll know that prepping for this event and getting the sketchbook published kicked our collective tails. We'll be discussing all the trials and tribulations of that down the line in a future episode. For now, I'm happy to say that we've got our next convention appearance already booked. We'll be at Megaplex in Orlando, Florida, August 4th through the 6th, where we'll have a table in Artist Alley and we'll be selling sketchbooks, doing some art, and hopefully making some new friends and fans. As a matter of fact, if you happen to live in or around Orlando, it's worth noting you can get copies of the Lightning Dog sketchbook at A Comic Shop. That's the name of the store, A Comic Shop. We mention them at the top of every show on the Nerdy Show Network, and they're awesome, so pop on down to the store and save yourself some shipping. As you certainly know by now, we're entirely listener-supported. You can support this and every show on the Nerdy Show Network at patreon.com/nerdyshow, and you can support Lightning Dogs and get a wealth of bonus content at patreon.com/lightningdogs. You giving your hard-earned money to invest in our dreams means the world to us, so please join us there. Even a dollar is a huge help, and we'll give you a shout-out on the show. If you truly can't spare any money, perhaps you can spare some time. Sharing this show or rating and reviewing it helps new people discover the glory of Lightning Dogs. Here's a recent review from iTunes by The Wizard of Retcon. Lightning Dogs is an incredible concept, and the official podcast contains world-building that I could only dream of accomplishing. I've been keeping up with it since the fateful first lightning strike, and greatly anticipate its hopeful arrival in the nerdosphere. If I could donate to Patreon, I would. But sadly, this review is all I have to offer. Hashtag HalNoise. Thanks, Wizard. We sincerely appreciate it. Now, while iTunes is still the leading hub for podcasts, it's not truly built for podcast discovery, and it can be a pain to use. Fortunately, there's an answer. A new platform called Podchaser recently debuted, and it's made not just for easily rating and reviewing your favorite shows, but championing your favorite single episodes and tagging series and episodes to be more discoverable based on the specific things that they talk about. We want Podchaser to become the next big thing. It's in closed beta right now, and we have some beta keys. So hop on to podchaser.com and enter either the key nerdy or nerdy show and get to rating and reviewing Lightning Dogs. We've got more information at nerdyshow.com/podchaser. In our next episode, we're doing a draw stream. Tony is doing some live drawing while Cap and I make suggestions and dive deeper into the character in question. The subject of this experiment? Queen Lich. You can watch the whole thing on YouTube or hear it in the annotated documentary podcast format that you know and love. We'll see you next time. Same Lightning Dogs time, same Lightning Dogs channel.
Hashtag HalNoise.